Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This is G.R. Mobley. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. If you go to MobiusStripPress.com, you can find out how you can download these podcasts and find our support documents and links. Let me go back to the last show real quick and make a correction. It was actually John Adams, not James Adams. James Adams was a British statesman of the time, and he was a conservative, just like Edmund Burke. However, sometimes I flip those up and reverse them because John Adams, there were a lot of James Monroe, James Madison, and so forth. So forgive me for calling James Adams the British statesman for signing the Sedition Act when it was actually President John Adams. In addition to some other feedback that I've gotten a lot of feedback regarding voting. Our solution, as I said last week, our solution is unity. And division has been our downfall. They've been using division, or we've been using division, however we want to look at it. The division has been allowing the progressive agenda to move us forward. That being said, I've actually posted a Facebook article that's titled Unity Equals Individual Liberty and Division Equals Subjugation to the State. And so with this article, I'm hoping that everybody can kind of read through the argument regarding, and I tried to present it in an academic form, that when one looks at the differences between the parties, the Libertarian and Constitutional Party share the same core principles regarding our individual liberty and sovereignty, that they want to preserve them, and they believe that these are inalienable. Some within the party may be secular, but they are outliers in this party. They're not, I would say, the majority of the constitutionalists. Most constitutionalists I know really believe the Declaration of Independence, that we were endowed by our Creator. And it's the same thing with many libertarians. Now, more libertarians may be secular, but they still believe that we have inalienable rights, that we have the right to privacy, we have the right for self-expression, and so forth. And on the core principles of individual liberty and individual sovereignty, now let me clarify, most people don't understand individual sovereignty. Sovereignty is the person or the entity that has the final say. This is why the framers created a nation with three levels of sovereignty. The individual has the sovereignty and who represents them. We are a representative government, so we don't have sovereignty on all things. We don't have the individual right to say this should not be our foreign policy. We use representatives to drive that. In the Constitution, foreign policy is actually granted to the president. And that's one of the reasons why it is paramount that we really look at foreign policy in our elections and who really represents the type of foreign policy that we want as a republic imbued within that presidential candidate. In other words, if you're looking at the different candidates, which one is representing your concept or your paradigm as to where we should be as a nation in our foreign policy? Should we be a strong nation advocating individual liberty? Should we be a meddling nation that's trying to do quid pro quo? You do this for us, we'll do this for you. As we've looked historically from this last president and many other presidents, we've been sold downriver in our foreign policies to help others at the disadvantage and demise of our own, as to our own states, our republic, and us as a nation. Anyway, so the seculars may have this shared opinion that individual liberty and sovereignty is an inalienable right. There are a few that are outliers, that I would call them, that, you know, don't really consider those inalienable rights coming from our Creator. They just believe that we have these rights to have them. In contrast to that, though, the Democratic Party has no reverence towards these core principles, nor do they believe that they are inalienable. A true Democrat really believes that the state is the one that dictates what your freedoms can be. And if you think you can say something and that hurts somebody's feelings, then they believe that there ought to be a law against you hurting somebody's feelings, and they're going to regulate what you can say. Now, that tips off another thing. The word regulate in the Constitution, really at the time of the writing of the Constitution, regulate did not mean have control over every whit of something such as commerce or immigration or so forth. Regulate, and like a militia, regulate actually meant to put in good order, not necessarily to have full control over something. The definition of that word has slid to a point where government regulates every whit and every little nitinoid of our plumbing. They're dictating how much your toilet can flush. That was not the intent of the regulate for government back in the time of the Constitution. Regulate meant put in good order, that, you know, a sewage system is provided. Now, at the federal government level, that regulate was dictated within the enumerated powers and not within an ambiguous level of power or an unlimited power, as I stated in the last show regarding Jefferson, where the states were opposing, at least Kentucky and Virginia, were opposing the Sedition Act. And Thomas Jefferson said, we didn't sign up for unlimited government. So anyway, I went on this aside of, or a tangent of regulate. So forgive me. Let me get back to these two core principles, or the fundamental argument that I have, and why unity is so important, because there is a diametric opposition between individual liberty and sovereignty and government dictating what you can do and what you can't do. If you really look at it at a macro view, most of the parties, such as the Republican Party, the Constitutional Party, the Libertarian Party, these parties revere and embrace the concepts of individual liberty and individual sovereignty. The Democrats don't. The Green Party doesn't. All of the splintered groups that have come from the Democratic Party are subjugators. They want to enslave the citizens and the electorate to the state. They want to dictate what you can do, what you can't do, because they believe, they truly believe they know better. They know 3,000 miles away what's better for you up in your cabins, up in the woods, or whether you're driving your car through the desert. It doesn't matter. They know what's better, and they want to regulate every nitinoid of your life, every little facet within your interchange and your commerce and your dealings with almost anybody, whether it's your phone, whether it is your computer. It doesn't matter. They want to regulate it, and they believe that they know better and how to do that. Conversely, you can look at these other parties where they have some level of belief, but their core principles. Let me back up. I didn't finish that thought. Republican Party, the Libertarian Party, even the Constitutional Party looks at a nationalistic perspective of the government, and they do have some nationalism perspectives, but they still cling on to, and the majority of the people within the party cling to a limited government. They cling to individual liberty and individual sovereignty. These founding principles, individual liberty and individual sovereignty, are harmonious with our Lord's plan of salvation. How is that? How can I make that assertion? And I actually talk about this as well in this Facebook article. If you go and read this Facebook article that I spoke of regarding unity equals individual liberty, division equals subjugation to the state. And I'll get into that right here, but I want you to understand that the Lord's plan of salvation was one where every person had to choose, had to learn for themselves what the truth was, and had to be able to choose based on the knowledge that they had whether they wanted to accept him or not. I can't believe that any preacher is going to, at least a true Christian preacher, is going to tell you that you have to do something. I believe that when the Lord stepped in with the adulteress and when she was about to be stoned and basically told everybody with stones in their hands, well, he who's without sin cast the first stone. At that point in time, in context, he told her to go and sin no more. So she still had the choice of sinning or not, and whether he forgave her or not is another story. But the fact is that the Lord wants us to choose for ourselves. No one can be compelled to be saved, nor no one can be compelled to be charitable. We have to do these things willingly as willing and obedient followers of Christ. And so if one looks at individual liberty and individual sovereignty, that just aligns with the Lord's plan of salvation. One of the things that I want to also get into is a concept of centrifugal and centripetal theory regarding these two opposing ideologies of statism and individual liberty and individual sovereignty. And so let me take a quick break here and I'll get back into centrifugal and centripetal theory. Thank you very much. Right before the break, I introduced a theory, and actually I introduced this theory in my inaugural show, where I talked about centrifugal and centripetal energies of politics. And the centrifugal, centripetal theory is a contrast between these ideologies that I've been talking of. These ideologies that I'm talking of individual liberty and individual sovereignty, is the same thing versus statism. Is the same thing as centrifugal energy or centrifugal political energy versus centripetal political energy. Centrifugal energy, everybody kind of understands what that is where you hold a bucket and you start turning around, and as you spin around faster and faster, that bucket goes up, and all the water that you put in that bucket or whatever the contents are, they can be feathers, the majority of all that content will stay in because of the centrifugal energy or centrifugal force that is trying to throw that stuff outward. What the framers created was a government with centrifugal force or centrifugal energy that allowed the government and the decisions of government to flow outward. They created a very productive system that allowed government and our self-government to flourish so that one state could have the freedom to do whatever they wanted to do and the other states had the freedom to do whatever they wanted to do. Today, we see a huge contrast between states and many of the states. Great example, if you compare and contrast Texas to California, California is a very centripetal, and I didn't get into that theory but if you look at California, it's centripetal. It's inward drawing. It's centralizing. They're trying to control everything. They're very oppressive. They're raising taxes. As a matter of fact, right after the Super Bowl, they went after all of the players that played in the Super Bowl. Even though they weren't California residents, they went after them for their income tax because they earned that money in the state of California because the game was played in San Francisco. So they're very aggressive in trying to take what they believe is theirs. Texas, on the other hand, is a more of a laissez-faire approach in how they treat their people. So what ends up happening, and this is why they created the centrifugal energy, because California has the right to be as oppressive as they want, because the Constitution allows them. As long as California does not violate any Bill of Rights, because the 14th Amendment, Section 1, clearly states that no state shall pass any law that, and I'm paraphrasing here, that no state can pass any law that will infringe upon the individual immunities and privileges that are guaranteed within the Constitution, which includes the Bill of Rights. If you look at the contrast of these two states. People that live in California that want to have freedom, that want to have the ability to do whatever they want to do, or at least not pay as much taxes, and be living with people that share their mind model of being productive instead of indolent, or living on welfare and so forth, then most people have the freedom to pack up. They may not want to because they love living on the coast, but people have the freedom to pack up and move to a state where your rights will be respected. And so there's this competition of states. So if you want to send California a message, move out. If you want to send an oppressive state a message, the Constitution guarantees all of us the freedom to be able to go from one state to another, that our citizenship is a shared citizenship. Even though within these states, we do have a lock on being a citizen of that state, and we have an obligation of being active in that state. But if you feel like your state has abandoned you, then I suggest you leave. And then once you abandon that state, and as the revenue goes down, as more and more people and businesses abandon that state, then they will have to do one of two things. They'll either have to continue to oppress more and more their people, or they'll have to relax their oppression and their regulations and so forth until they finally find that happy medium, instead of providing extraneous services to, you know, guaranteed housing for people that have no jobs or not citizens of the nation or what have you. And there's all sorts of these types of entitlement programs that are in most of these oppressive states. Back to the centripetal theory and the centrifugal theory. Centripetal energy, because I talked about centrifugal energy flowing outward. Centripetal energy is the energy that is like the nucleus of an atom. What causes those ions to continually circle around and hold their space with, you know, and distance from the nucleus? There is this atomic or nuclear force that holds that in. And centripetal energy is the force of holding something in and bringing it together and keeping it at bay. Centripetal energy in politics is a very destructive energy, because what it tries to do is it tries to hold and bring in and pull together towards the circle, or towards the center of control, all of the decision-making, all of the powers, and so forth. In other words, if you're not a part of the centralized government, if you're not a part of that core policy-making and the core decision-making, then you have no power and or no decisions to be made. They're going to dictate what you can do. They're going to dictate prices. And they've done this before. As a matter of fact, case in point on prices, if you look back into the 70s when Nixon was president, there was a point in time where prices, you know, were just going out of control, and the prices kept on going up and up because we got off the gold standard. So what did Nixon do? He tried to be authoritarian, and he actually dictated the prices would be maintained at a certain point. And if you do the research, you'll find that farmers were killing their chickens and they were killing their livestock and basically burning their products, because they were losing money by holding their products at a very certain price. So what they tried to do was say, you know what, if I can't sell it at a price that the free market will dictate it, then I'm not going to be selling it. And they literally got rid of a lot of their products and or livestock. And in doing so, what ended up happening was it created a shortage, which would naturally drive the price up. Anyway, centripetal theory versus centrifugal theory is one is very destructive and it's very controlling. It's authoritarian. Centrifugal is outward flowing. It's distributive. It's designed to allow other polities to rise up and flourish. This way, new states could come into the union and flourish without all these central controls and without a bunch of bureaucrats coming in and going, you can't do that. You can't do this. You have to do this, this, and this. Anyway, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but if you look at the two parties, or I should say the two primary parties, the Democrat and the Republican Party, and the splinter groups that have come from these parties, because I'll tell you, the constitutional group did not come from the Democratic Party. It came from the Republican Party. That's why they still share these core principles, these core standards that the framers shared at that same time, the principles of individual liberty and individual sovereignty. Another article that I posted on Facebook dealt with voter fraud. And so why is this important regarding this unity article? Well, if you really look, and if you can't find evidence on TV, you don't have to look too hard on the internet, and you'll easily find empirical data and a mountain of evidence that proves that voter fraud is alive and well. As a matter of fact, right here in Washington, I believe it was a trunk full of ballots that helped put Inslee in office over Dino Rossi. One cannot look at these principled abstainers and or these people that are deciding not to vote in the face of voter fraud. One cannot look at these people and say, I'm not going to be involved in voting because, you know, I'm a never Trump person, or, you know, I was a real Cruz supporter. Anybody that is abstaining from the election process is somebody that is dividing, and they're a divisive person. And there's plenty of people on Facebook, on the internet, on the airwaves that are trying to be divisive and saying, this is why we need to go away from Trump, away from the Republican ticket. The libertarians are trying to bask in the I'll call it the marketing of their perspective. And what they're doing is they're driving the opportunity up for the Democrats, who are very unified, and getting their person in and getting their policies forward. The reason we've been losing all of these elections is because we keep on chasing these little things. I believe I've stated before, and I state in this article, that it is very critical that we unify and send a message. In unity, we don't have to accept whatever that person, you know, wants to dictate or ram down our throat. As we look at the policies and those types of problems that come with an individual candidate, whether it be the president, whether it be a senator, whether it be a congressman, whether it be a city councilman, the problems can easily be overcome through the contract. These candidates raise their arm to the square, and they take an oath that they will defend and support the Constitution of the United States. And in doing that, we can hold them accountable for any action that violates the Constitution, for any action that violates their roles, responsibilities, and powers that are directly associated to their position. Well, I was hoping to get into some of the citations from last week and getting towards Washington's farewell address and so forth, but it looks like I've actually ranted myself out of time. I apologize for that, and apologize for some of the stumbling, but stay tuned, and I'll be back next week with some more citations and ranting. Thank you.